This is the Dog Days Podcast from UGASports.com. I'm your host, Dane Young. This is the podcast where we chat with former Georgia Bulldogs about their eras in Athens. And on this episode, we have Ben Jones, former four-year starter at center for the Bulldogs from 2008 to 2011. You remember his personality and some of the famous photos, including getting the hunk of turf against Georgia Tech in his mouth after that victory against the Yellow Jackets. Here he is, Ben Jones. All right, Ben Jones joining us here on the Dog Days podcast. And Ben, we were chatting beforehand that you're on daddy duty right now. So I got to ask, which is tougher, going against some of those NFL defensive linemen or trying to corral a two-year-old when it's nap time?
Two-year-olds, definitely. You're definitely on their schedule, and they know how to get what they want. Even though sometimes you can't give them that, they know exactly what they want.
They're smart, man. They're crazy smart. It's a fun life, that's for sure. Well, congratulations to you and your family on that. It is the NFL offseason. I know things are a little bit crazy right now with the coronavirus stuff. I know some NFL free agency stuff is happening. What's life for you like right now after the season that the Titans had?
Yeah, we had a good season. We had a good run. That's what we always say about the NFL. You just got to get in, and we were the last seed to get in. We had to win the last game and had to have some people lose for us to get in, and it happened. And we went on a run, and that's when good football teams in January, you're able to run the ball and play good defense, and that's what we did. We were able to rush for over 200 yards in two of those wins, and going into – we had to beat the 1, 2, and 3 seed to go to the Super Bowl, and we knocked off the 1 and the 3, so we were close to knocking them all off.
Well, now you know the next step. And I got to know, because Derrick Henry wants a Georgia commit, but obviously went to Alabama. Do you ever give him grief for that and you know, say, hey, you should have gone to where I went?
All the time. He's one of my good buddies. I actually talk to him on the phone about it every day. Great guy. And I think when he was coming out, it was just Georgia was getting some good guys, too. I know we had Todd Gurley. We had Marshall. We had Sony and Chubb. They were all kind of filing in there. And I think that was the best fit for him, and he always comes in and says, roll dogs to me in the morning, so he's a good dude. He's a really good guy and a good teammate.
He's a big dude, that's what I'll say.
Yes, he's a very large human.
After standing beside him one time, I'm like, man, guys his size should not be able to run that way.
Right.
So, Ben, I kind of want to get back to, when did you first know that football was going to be something that was going to be a big part of your life? Was it early in your childhood?
I was always a big kid, but in my town, it was really a baseball town that nobody really made it out for football. Our football program was kind of average. We really didn't make the playoffs when I was coming through. But our high school baseball team went to 3 straight state championships when I was like, in middle school, so everybody was all baseball in my town, and I was kind of one of the first ones to actually make a name for myself in football.
Did you ever think that baseball was going to be your primary sport?
Growing up, that was my sport, and I had the hitting record. I led the team in hits and RBIs my junior year. We lost in the state championship game and to Coleman, and I knew my body size was best for football, but I knew And my brother was ended up playing for Alabama for baseball and was drafted to the Tigers for baseball. So baseball was always there, but I know football fit me best and it was my passion.
What was your best stat line from a baseball game? Are we talking multiple home runs? What was your shining moment of baseball?
Oh, I was more of a I'd beat you to death. I'd hit the ball to right center gap. I don't think I ever hit a fastball. I always hit curveballs. I always batted in the four hole. So I went 4-for-4 off of A.J. McCarron in the semifinals to go to state.
So you were the RBI guy that just kind of keeps the order moving then.
Right. I didn't hit them out. My brother hit them all out. And I had speed guys in front of me like Zach Stacey, the running back for Vanderbilt. He was on our high school team. He played outfield and second and ran bases for us. So he was always on base, and I was able to hit him in a lot.
Well, man, growing up an hour from Tuscaloosa, I know the question came to you so often when you were around Georgia, but how did you end up getting away from Tuscaloosa and wind up being a Georgia person?
Yeah, I grew up a diehard Georgia fan. My dad went to the University of Georgia. All my mom and dad both grew up in Georgia. They went to Thomas County Central High School. My granddaddy was the principal there for 20 years and was a coach for the basketball team and track team. So all my roots are in Georgia. They actually moved to Alabama after my dad graduated because he was a forester and he was working in the timber business, and he ended up passing when I was 10 in a helicopter crash. And ever since then, I wanted to go to Georgia, but I didn't know how I was going to be able to get there and how to make it work. But I can't thank Coach Rick and them enough for giving me a scholarship and getting to live out my childhood dream.
I mean, for your dad to pass when you're 10 years old, I can't imagine how difficult that must have been at that age, and then even kind of living on with that legacy. How do you think he would feel about kind of where your football career has guided you to this point?
I hopefully he would be proud. I wear his number. He was number 60. So that was the reason I stayed at Georgia for my fourth year, so I could actually wear it at Georgia instead of leaving early for the draft. So that was one of the big reasons why I went to Georgia with him. So I wanted to be able to say, hey, I got to wear his number. And I still wear it to the day. I wore it all the way growing up in Little League, high school, and I've worn it now for 8 years in the league. And I think he would be proud now.
That's awesome. Well, you know, being a young kid growing up in Alabama, you know, some parts of your life, you had to get sick of Roll Tide at some point, right?
Yeah. My mom has five sisters, and I think three or four of them all married, big Alabama fans. And that's all I heard. My uncle, who actually took me to the Georgia camp because my brother was at a – I think he was playing in the Junior College World Series, so my mom couldn't carry me. He actually took me up there, and he is a huge Alabama fan. But he knew, like, hey, he's like, hey, no Alabama camp next week. I'm like, I know, I won't commit today. So I ended up going to Alabama camp the next day or the next weekend, got offered from Alabama, and called Georgia right away. I was like, hey, I'm coming to Georgia. I just had to do it for my uncle to say I went to the camp.
Got to appease someone in the family for that. Let's go back to that recruiting a little bit. Who was your main recruiter at Georgia, and how did those conversations go?
Yeah, I really didn't get recruited. I went to a Nike camp at Georgia Tech that my uncle actually called to get me in because we lost in the state championship on like Wednesday or Thursday, and somebody dropped out that camp. He's like, hey, can we get him in? They're like, he's got to have some offers. He's like, well, he just got Troy offered at the state championship game. So they're like, all right, bring him in. And then getting MVP of the camp. And Coach Rick was actually there watching his son because he was a quarterback at the time. And I got a phone call that night from Coach Sterles, the line coach. He's like, we have a camp coming up. I think it was a 2-day camp. We'd love to see you. And from then, I went there, took my butt off for 2 days, and after the camp, they offered me a scholarship, and the next week, I committed.
Wow. I mean, so it really was just you were on for a couple of days, and the right people were there to see you then.
Right. That was my whole thing. I was going to go out there and outwork them, and because everybody always told me, oh, I wasn't big enough, I wasn't from a big enough school. And they're like, oh, we want to see you in person. I'm like, all right, I'll come. Because I'm 6'3", I'm 315 pounds, and I've been that size my whole life. I played basketball, football, baseball, wrestled growing up. So I'd played multiple sports, and I think that really helped me because I wasn't just one-dimensional. And going out there and competing, you're going against the best guys. I was going against A.J. Harmon, who's one of the big commits from Georgia, and I ended up whooping him a couple times. I think that sparked some interest in him.
And were you playing center in these camps, or was it a different offensive line position?
I think they had me at center, but I'd only snapped my freshman or sophomore year when my brother was the quarterback. Then I played guard from then on, but they were recruiting me as a center.
I know you grew up a Georgia fan. How often did you go to games in Athens prior to playing for Georgia?
I went to one. It was one of my visits. I went and watched them play South Carolina. But other than that, I'd never been to – I went and actually watched them play at Alabama. I think I was the only Georgia fan in the Alabama section wearing a Georgia jersey.
Was that the overtime win?
I was at that game, but it was another one back in – I'm trying to think what year it was. It was like a goal line stand down there. I'm trying to think. I think Georgia won, actually.
Yeah.
It was early 2000s, maybe.
Well, Alabama wasn't as good then, as you know.
Right.
And then Nick Saban got there and things changed a little bit. And, you know, I don't want to say that your destiny wouldn't have been different, but all I know is that if Nick Saban would have been after you a couple years after they had turned the program around, I got to think you'd at least been more receptive to listen to what Alabama, if they wanted you.
Yeah, I remember his phone call. He called my mom, and my mom's a Christian lady who means when she, hey, when we give our word to somebody, it means something. And when I committed to Georgia, he calls like, well, you can change his mind. You're his mom. She's like, he gave his word. And I was like, oh, you messed with the wrong woman.
It's always the mama, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So you get to Georgia, and did you have, I mean, from Bibb County, Alabama, to, you know, Athens, Georgia, which is one of the best college towns in the country. Was there any culture shock? Were you used to it? Were you ready for what was coming?
I was definitely not ready. I grew up on a cattle farm in Alabama and didn't have internet, didn't have a cell phone growing up. So I get to college, I'm like, what is this? I'm used to waking up early, going to bed. We had to go to bed at 9 o'clock all the way through high school. So my mom was really strict. And I get there, I'm like, I have a cell phone that actually has cell phone service. I remember getting into Alabama, and we don't even have Verizon towers yet, so I couldn't even turn it on. Then I'm like, oh, I got to write a paper on a computer. I don't just handwrite it. So it was definitely a culture shock for me. I think all my roommates were looking at me like, where are you from?
Well, and, you know, some people may kind of laugh at that a little bit, but we're only talking, what, about a decade ago. I mean, there's so much has changed just technology-wise at this point. You know, I understand what you're saying, that that's not that crazy of a concept. How did you adjust to it? What, did it just take time, or did you kind of lean on some different guys that came in with you?
I kind of just kept to what my – I knew how to work hard. I got up every morning at 5 a.m. I didn't have a way around, so I walked to the weight room every morning, did extra cardio and workout in the morning because I wanted to be stronger. I wanted to be in shape. Then I'd walk over to study hall at 7 a.m. when the rest of my roommates were waking up, then go to class. And I kind of just did what I was used to being on the farm. I kind of ran my own schedule and still went to bed around 9 o'clock until I ended up actually getting used to the college life.
Did you early enroll at all, or were you coming
in
that fall?
I came in January.
Yeah, so you had mat drills then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was brutal.
I hear that tone.
Oh, yeah.
What
they would have told me about mat drills before I went there. I don't know if I would have came that early. I wouldn't have been that excited to get there so early.
You might have been a summer enrollee had they said something about mat drills.
Yeah. Now knowing, I'm like, oh, stay. I tell kids, like, just stay and enjoy your last semester of high school.
Do you think getting there that semester early, do you think that prepared you to play as much as you did your freshman year?
Yeah, if I didn't come in early, I would definitely not have been able to start that many games and play as a freshman, because I was able to learn the whole offense and know what it took to actually play in it in college, because I was going against some of the best guys like Geno Atkins, Jeff Owens, Cade Weston every day, and honestly, I didn't play against a better guy in a game all year.
That's what I've heard a lot of people say, that sometimes his practice competitions are better than anything you see on the Saturday.
100%.
What was the conversation like when, I don't know if it was your position coach or if it was Coach Rick that tells you, hey, Ben, you're going to be starting this game? Because you got 10 starts that freshman year, but when they made the change for when you become center, how was that conversation?
Yeah, I remember because the first game, I knew Coach Earl was like, hey, you're going to go in the third series no matter what. I was like, all right. And I didn't think that my first series would be backed up on the one-yard line. And I'm like, oh, and I'd had snap issues through spring and some of that because I didn't snap in 3 years. And I remember walking in the huddle, and Stafford goes, all right, Ben, I guess this is what we're going to do right now. And I remember we ran a quarterback sneak to get it out. I was like, just give him the ball. So I was so nervous. But – I ended up starting my first game at Arizona State, and it was my only game my mom and grandparents didn't come to, because if I told them I was starting, they'd have drove out there because my grandparents won't fly. And they literally drove every other game throughout my whole college career. They drove to Colorado. They drove to Jacksonville every year. So they made the trip everywhere else.
That's That's a lot of miles.
Yes.
I think the infamous, I guess infamous being the right word, game of your freshman year was the 45-42 loss to Georgia Tech. And there's the picture that comes the following year, the famous one of you with your mouth has the Georgia Tech paint all over it, and you've got the turf in your hand. What did that loss to Georgia Tech your freshman year, what did that mean to you?
We found out what a rivalry really means. Because before that, they'd won so many games. They were like, oh, it's just Georgia Tech. Florida's a bigger game. Auburn's a bigger game. But seeing our heads just getting ripped up at our home field, and seeing the seniors didn't get the trophy, getting that award for beating Georgia Tech, we were going to make a statement the next year.
Is Tech your most hated rival?
Oh, I hate Tech. I won't even say their first name because they don't deserve the first name.
That's so fresh still. That's wonderful. I love that. So you go into the next year, you do get the win against Tech. It's an 8-5 season. But you are the full-time starter, going into your sophomore year. What's that like for you? Because at that point, you're kind of transitioning from being one of the new guys to being one of the team leaders, right?
Right. We were all young as an offensive lineman, me and Clint Boland and Glenn, it was our second year really playing together. All four of us were really young. And that year didn't go how we wanted. Joe Cox was our quarterback. And it was just a lot of games that we fell short in. And that game, I remember we were 6-5 going into Georgia Tech, and they just won the ACC. So we were just hearing it and hearing it, how they were going to run all over us. And just being able to go out there and run for that many yards in their stadium. And supposedly they're supposed to be the best rush offense in the country, and going out there and doing it on their turf, it just sealed the deal off even better.
Well, and like you said, the record's not exactly what you want, but you know, if you beat the right team, sometimes that can salvage a year a little bit. 2010, I remember specifically because this is when I was a senior at UGA graduating from the journalism school. 6-7, not a great season. There was a half that I believe you got suspended for clipping against Mississippi State. Is that right?
Yeah, I got a necessary roughness against Fletcher Cox. And that's my thing. The whistle hadn't blown. I didn't know I couldn't get a guy 20 yards behind the play. I'm just blocking till the whistle play. Because that's how our O-line coach was like, hey, you're going to do whatever it takes till that whistle blows. And I was just doing what I was supposed to do. And he's like, don't worry about it. Like, you're just playing hard. I wish everybody would play this hard. But that was my mentality. And my mom and grandma would always give me a hard time. She's like, y'all stop getting personal fouls. I'm like, grandma, we're playing in Tennessee. I can't hear anything. So you got to tell me I'm hitting the guy that's standing by a pile. I don't know if the running back's up, down. I'm just playing till my guy ain't standing up.
I feel like you just used air quotes when you said unnecessary roughness on that play.
Oh, man, yeah. Because I didn't know what it was supposed to be. It might have been called clipping. I don't know what it was. But I got a hold to him pretty good.
Do you ever talk to him about that now? Because, I mean, that's a guy you'll see in the league up there a lot.
No, I don't really say much to him now. He's a grown man, and I'm trying to keep him as happy as possible on some days.
Yeah, I guess that's a smart strategy as well. Your senior year, you could start to see where Georgia was heading. 10-4, but you get to the SEC championship, and Chris Burnett was telling me that particular SEC championship game was as probably – I don't know, as I don't want to say blindsided, but he just said LSU just had everything going, and it just seemed like a blur by the time the team got into the locker room. Was that how you felt like it was as well?
We started out hot. I think we jumped up on them. Everything was going our way. We dropped the touchdown in the end zone and ended up having to kick a field goal, and so that kind of took the momentum. But we were dominating them on defense. We were doing whatever we wanted. Then all of a sudden, right for a half, they take a punt to a house. Then the next drive, they get it back. So it's like all tied up. We're like, wow, how did all our momentum get took that quick in the last like 2 minutes of the half? Then after half, they ran away with it. They got things clicking and we couldn't stop them.
Did you get to watch the SEC championship this past season with Georgia and LSU? I'm just wondering if some of those same memories popped up for you.
I actually didn't get to watch. I was in meetings. Every time I go into the games, Like, I didn't get to watch the Alabama Georgia game when they lost on like the 4 yard line because we were in meeting. So all those games, if it's a 3:30 game or whatever it is, I miss most of the action because we're in meetings.
Well, you may be in luck. I guess it's the first game of the season, but the first game this coming season, if the schedule stays straight, Georgia plays on the Monday night against Virginia. Oh. So, yeah, they're the Labor Day game in Atlanta.
Nice. Yeah, I'll definitely get to watch it.
Well, I hope you do. The other thing I didn't ask about from that 2011 season, and I like asking about it because you're not seemingly much of a guy that cares about fashion, but those jerseys, the Power Ranger jerseys against Boise State, what was your stance on them?
As a big man, we want to wear black. We want to wear something that's got two tones. All red doesn't look good on big guys. And they were the better team that day. They came. They had a game plan. They were on fire. And that day, they were the better team when we played them.
The story that I think it was Burnett and I think maybe even Keith Marshall told me as well is Brandon Boykin, and then there was one other player that modeled those jerseys for the team when it was revealed to you guys that you were going to get an alternative jersey for that game. And at first, everyone was hyped just because of something different and something new. But then kind of the more that people looked at him, that's when the skepticism came in. Was that kind of where your mind was, or do you even care about the jersey?
I usually don't care. My whole thing is if it fits and having to get that helmet adjusted and getting everything right. Because I remember, I think it was either my sophomore or junior year, we played Florida, and we came out in black helmets and black pants, mm-hmm. But we couldn't wear them out for warm-up, so we had to go in and change real quick and trying to get your helmet all adjusted, and that was a pain. So I like being prepared. I'm a guy, like now, if the game starts at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I show up to the stadium at 9 o'clock because I want to make sure I'm there plenty ahead of time, everything's laid out, everything's done a certain way. I'm a man of routine.
Do you have a favorite memory playing for Georgia? Is there a game that stands out or a moment that stands out?
I know my senior year we had it was a big turning point because if we didn't turn it around, I think our coaches were in jeopardy because we had two bad years before that, and we started out 0-2 and ended up winning 10 in a row and getting to go to SEC championship. And beating Florida that year, that was my first time beating Florida, beating Georgia Tech as a senior. Then beating Auburn the way we did at home. I think we beat them like 45-3, 45-7. Just we were manhandling people. And we were doing it with Brandon Harton, Kyle Karempolis as our running backs because Isaiah Crowell was beat up at the end of the year.
Yeah, I do remember that. That depth chart really got down deep on the running back side of it. Did you know kind of that the team that was following you for that 2012 season, you wouldn't be there, but did you know that that team had the makings to be a special team?
Yeah, I knew they had a lot of guys coming back on defense and they were going to be really good on there, but I didn't know they were going to have a two-headed monster like the Keith Marshall and Todd Gurley coming in because they were something special on offense. And as an offensive lineman, that's a dream to block for two backs like that.
You know, I mentioned the photo that's famous of you. If I search your name on Google Images and I get past the Dukes of Hazzard stuff, then you find the photo of you with the turf in your mouth. But the other one that a lot of people bring up is your pregame routine of walking the field barefoot. Do you still do that?
I still do. And I'm going to let you know it gets a lot colder in New England and Kansas City in January. I've walked it at negative 10 and 0 degrees. It didn't get that cold in Alabama and Georgia growing up.
I mean, do you ever say to yourself, man, this is crazy that I'm walking out here in these temperatures. This is uncomfortable. But, like, do you ever almost not do it?
Oh, no. It has a meaning behind it, and I've done it since I was in high school. I've done it since my freshman year of high school because my brother was a quarterback, and I remember him because I'd always take a nap before the games. And he would wake me up like, hey, I got to walk the field. So I get up to walk the field. And I remember the first time I did it, I didn't have my shoes on. And he's the one who's so superstitious. He was like, the next week I got up, I went to put on my shoes. He's like, no, I threw for 300 yards. You can't wear shoes the rest of your life. I'm like, all right, I got you, bud. So then it kind of carried on because I respect my brother. He's been my role model because he was that father figure for me growing up, losing my dad. And that's the reason I do it today. Because he works his butt off, He works in a steel company, and if he was a better athlete, he was a better guy. He was a valedictorian of our high school, so I look up to him till today.
What does he think about your NFL career?
He gives me a hard time. I'm like, hey, did you watch the game? He goes, Bud, did you watch me work this week? I'm like, nah, you're right. He said, I'm trying to earn my paycheck, but he watches games and when he's able to, but he's working. He works his butt off. He's about to add a fourth one to his family. He's got three boys and a little girl, and he's one of the hardest working men I know.
Oh, man, y'all's holidays are going to be crazy with all these kids running around.
Yeah, we enjoy it, though.
Yeah, that's fun. When you got drafted in the fourth round, Texans, right? So mm-hmm. what was that feeling like for you? Because I know for a lot of people, that's a very much a dream come true moment.
Right. I remember we had to go into town and watch it so I could get cell service. My mom and them still didn't get cell service at her house, so I had to drive into town. So our whole family was there. It was probably 40 people. And the whole process, they said you can go from second to fourth round. So you're sitting there like, oh, where am I going to go? And you really don't know, and you really have no idea, because you're sitting there like, oh, they could use a center. I'm like, oh, they might take a center. But then I'm like, oh, man, because I was thinking I was going to Atlanta, because when the whole draft process, they thought Peter Kahn was going to be gone the first round, and they were going to take me in the second or third. But he fell to the second. So I'm sitting there, I'm like, oh, I'm going to go to here in the second or third round to Atlanta. I'm going to get to stay in Georgia, be close to family. Then Houston called, and I was like, wow. I knew they had a Pro Bowl center. I'd never talked to them once through the whole draft process, and literally had no idea what I was going to be. I'm like, why did they draft me? They got one of the best centers in the league, and I ended up starting there for 3 years at guard. And then my last year there in Houston, I ended up moving over to center.
That's got to be a nerve-wracking, handful of hours, just watching people get drafted, waiting on your phone to ring. I don't know how you handle anxiety, but how difficult was that, just trying to figure out what your fate was going to be?
Yeah, I knew, like, the first round I knew I was just there watching the draft just to see my friends and guys I trained with. I knew I was not going in the first round. But when day two came around, I was like, hey, I got a chance to go. And when I didn't get that call that night, I was like, man, where am I going to go? I remember staying up late playing cornhole outside with my brother. He's like, hey, it's going to be all right. It's gonna all work out. So he kind of kept me. So I think I stayed up late that night. We just sat there and shot basketball and played cornhole all night. And the next day, I think literally I was walking in, helping my mom carrying groceries and food that they prepared for the next day. When the phone got called, I think I got drafted in like the first two or three picks of the fourth round.
And then now you're with the Titans. I mean, you really haven't played football that far out at the South. You haven't had to be based way out west or way up north. Is that something that you take pride in, to be close to home, or
right?
Or do you even care?
Oh, it was definitely after my 4 years in Houston, then I went to a free agency. And I wanted to be close to home. I could have stayed in Houston. I could have went to San Diego or other team. But I was ready to start a family with my wife, and we wanted to get back closer to home. And I ended up going to Nashville, who was the worst team in the league that year. And I was like, all right, I just went from winning the division championship in Houston to going to the team that had the first pick of the draft. And I wanted to make an example, and talking to they had a new GM, new head coach. And he was like, hey, we need to bring a leader in here. We need to change the culture in here. And he's like, you're the guy we want to do it with. So that was the reason I'm here, and I'm still here. I just signed another contract here during the season, and hopefully I get to finish out my career here.
Do you plan on living in Nashville after your NFL days are done, or have you fallen in love with that city? Because I feel like everyone else has.
Oh, we love the city, but we hadn't got that far yet. We do love being close to family, so – We could end it up in Alabama, Georgia, or Nashville. It's going to be one of those three.
Yeah. I've got some quick hitters for you, and then I'll get you out of here because I don't want to infringe upon nap time ending and put you in a difficult spot. One thing is, what's your connection like with David Andrews? Because having two centers play, essentially a full decade is what it was like between you and he at Georgia. That's so incredibly rare to have that stability at a position. And then seeing what he has done with the Patriots and now you with the Titans, What's y'all's relationship like?
Everybody called it the father-son relationship when he got there. I picked him up right up under my wing. But I knew him through the whole recruiting process, going to camps. He was a guy just trying to figure out what it took to get to college. He worked out at the same place as Clint Bowlen did in the summers. So Clint would always talk about him. Then he would come up to Georgia to camps, and I would try to help him out as much as I could throughout, because I actually worked the camps in the summer with the O-line coaches because I didn't go home in the summer months. So I built that relationship with him when he was in high school. And my whole job my senior years was to make sure he was prepared for the next year. And I took he learned how to play the position, how to treat a woman right, because he called me and my wife, mom and dad. And so I wanted to show him, hey, it's not just about being a good player. It's how to live your life the right way. It's how to treat people the right way. And he's a heck of a guy. And we talk probably two or three times a week. We were just talking about the other day about riding the Peloton bikes and seeing how we could compete against each other by doing something like that.
Well, you know, that's one question I have with everyone being encouraged to stay indoors or to not be around crowds. What are NFL players doing to train right now? Because you have to get your bodies right if the season goes on like it should.
Right. I got a full weight set in my garage. I got everything you can think of in there. And I run in the backyard and I chase my daughter around. I think she's faster than most D linemen I have to block.
How much do you get to watch of the Georgia offensive linemen now? I know you said you don't get to watch a lot of games, but do you know any of the current guys on the team? I know they're way younger, but I just don't know if any of them reach out to you.
Right. I knew a lot of the guys from last year. I knew Ben Cleveland, Isaiah, all those guys. Because I went back and watched the spring practice, hung out with Pittman in the O-line room for a couple of days to kind of help them where I could and see how they worked. And they had some massive guys, actually. I remember because this year they started the opener at Vandy, so I was able to go and stay on the sideline with them. And they're just a different breed of guys than what we had. I would definitely be the smallest one, probably by 2 or 3 inches and about 20 pounds.
Definitely beside Isaiah Wilson. That guy is crazy big. Good Lord.
Yeah, he is massive. But love watching Pittman, what he did with them, how he taught the game of football to them. And you can tell they're good kids and they work their butt off for a guy. And they have the same mindset as we did. They wanted to be physical. They wanted to be dominant. And now they got a new O-line coach that's coming in. And I think he has the same principle and the same mindset. And that's the key, because your culture of your team is built by your O-line and D-line, the toughness of it and the physicality of your team. And that's got to be a staple of your program.
I think it was Boss Andrews that said the main thing that would have taken him away from Georgia was Matt Luke when he was at Duke and that connection. And I think it was Boss that said Matt Luke was someone that was really special to him in the recruiting process. So if that's the case, it sounds like Georgia just continues on the string of good offensive line coaches. I want to know, who was your funniest teammate?
Ooh, I live with all receivers, so I had Tavares King. He's got to be up there. I would definitely say him or who else? I'm trying to think. It's funny. I would definitely say probably Tavares then.
Do you have a funny story from him, or was it just his personality?
He never met a stranger. No matter who it was, we'd go miles after, and he would sit down at some random person's table, take the pizza, walk around, talk to him, sit back, take the milk, and try to see how many people's food he could eat before somebody would get mad at him, because he knew I was standing there with him. But nobody ever got mad at him. He was such a likable guy, and that's just him. He always knew I had his back, but I never had to step in, because he was that kind of guy that everybody loved. He was always playing pranks on people. So he was a guy that I enjoyed my 4 years of college with.
Well, that means he's a guy I got to get on this podcast. I will make a note of that.
Yeah, definitely.
What does it feel like to deliver a pancake block? Because that's something I'll never do.
That's what you strive for in every play. And we had a board in our O-line room for our pancakes and cut blocks. And that was our whole game. Every time you knock a guy on his back, it takes something out of him. And I wasn't going to help him up. So he's got to get up on himself. And I think I won the award all 4 years I was there, it was like a little plaque or something they'd give out, a t-shirt at the end of the year, and your picture went on the wall. So we took pride in that, and I would do whatever it took to get those pins, even if it cost me a half a game suspension.
What was the most impressive play that you saw in practice? We all see the game film and what players do there. What's a play in practice that you remember being like, man, I can't believe that just happened?
Watching AJ Green, because we'd always click over it without in there watching the O-line, like pass rush and all that. I'm like, oh, let's see what my roommates were all receiving. Like, no, you need to go watch 1-on-1s or 7-on-7. And some of the catches he would have in 1-on-1s or 7-on-7 were unreal. Left-handed over his head, over two people, pulling the ball off their back. It was just, it was something once a week.
You know, the funny thing is the two guys that people have told me when I asked that question on this podcast is A.J. Green's catches and then Matt Stafford, just how fast he can throw a ball. And it may even be guys that didn't even play with him, but that Stafford was just back working out or something in Athens, and he just would go to the practice field. And there's just something about his arm that the ball comes out differently.
Ask DeVaris King about Stafford, because that first summer or first spring, he didn't get his head around fast enough. And Stafford hit him right in the head with the ball. I thought it killed him.
I would not be surprised if it looked that way based on the stories that I've heard about him. I'll wrap up with this. I'm just curious about the kind of fraternity in the NFL among former Georgia players, because we see the photos that come on Twitter every now and again, but whether it's your teammates that are Bulldogs or even guys that you're playing against, what is that NFL community of former Georgia players like?
Yeah, it's a brotherhood, and I know the first time I got to go block Thomas Davis and shake Ben Watson's hand, it was the guys I grew up watching, and now I'm still blocking them, still playing against them, and it's pretty cool, because when in the heat of the battle, they're just like another guy, but after the game, they always come up, they give you a hug, and like, hey, praying for you and your family, like, it means a lot coming from guys. And now, since I'm one of the older ones, I don't know the younger kids that are coming in. So I'm trying to make that impact on them to let them know, like, hey, we're dog. We're always together.
You were a Georgia fan growing up. Were you ever starstruck by someone that you met? Like, did you meet your favorite player from when you were a kid?
Ooh. Mine was probably Champ Bailey or David Pollock. But I knew David Pollock from being at Georgia. I played racquetball with him and handball while he was coming back to school getting his degree. So I could beat him in handball because my hands are really thick and heavy. But we'd play racquetball, and he would wear a weighted vest, and he would give me an extra bounce, and he would still whoop my butt.
Wow.
He was unreal.
College Football Hall of Famer, David Pollock now.
Right. So just having that moment with him, being able to compete against him and just kind of pick his brain, because he's one of the best, and hate that his career got cut short because of a bad injury. But he's a super guy, and he's a guy I always looked up to as a kid.
I think he's made the most of the opportunities he's gotten, because I think he likes his gig now.
Yeah, he's got a good one.
Well, Ben, I'll let you get back to daddy time. I appreciate you making the time for us, and best wishes in the upcoming season. You only got one more step at this point, and that's to make it to the Super Bowl. So good luck on that journey.
I appreciate it. Take care.
Big thanks to Ben Jones for joining us here on the Dog Days podcast. We wish him continued success in the NFL. The Titans were one step away from the Super Bowl last season. We'll have to see what happens for him in the future. Thanks for listening. I'm Dane Young.